The date is July 28th, 1978, and we're watching National Lampoon's Animal House. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Hello and welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. However, that's what we normally do on this show. Right now, this month, and for the last time, we are pulling this hate train into the station. My name is Sean Wells, and with me is the otter to my boon.
Hello, I'm Aaron Knowles, and I'm a zit.
they're a better partnership. So I mean, I should have given you John Belushi. That's the obvious choice, but
it's all good.
Yeah, sorry. You were queued up for something else, and it's like you're like, what does Otter say? What's one of his catchphrases? I guess he doesn't really have any.
Nope.
Well, this week we are looking back just a few months before I was born, July 1978, when the movies and theaters were Grease. Which was talked about as a possibility of being the fourth choice for this month from you. Interestingly enough, you're hating on 1978.
I'm glad I squeezed by without having to watch Grease.
Yeah. Foul Play, which is a Goldie Hawn Chevy Chase classic. Revenge of the Pink Panther. The Swarm, which is a Michael Caine movie. I got to take a detour here. The Swarm is a movie starring Michael Caine, and here's the synopsis. A huge swarm of deadly African bees
Jesus.
Spreads terror over American cities by killing thousands of people.
That sounds horrible.
Yes.
I mean, not like a horrible movie, like a terrifying movie.
A terrifying prospect, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. It scored a 4.5 out of 10 on IMDb, so it may not be very good. I don't know. This movie's rated higher, and we'll see what we thought of this movie. But so anyway, we are, of course, looking at our movie for today, National Lampoon's Animal House, which earned $141.6 million on a $3 million budget. Took it to the inflation calculator. That's $656 in today money. Yeah, on like $13.95
million. Ooh. Well, go back to college if you want to know the math on this one, but I wouldn't worry about spoilers from this outdated.
Oh? I said it was 3 months older than me, so it's 44. That's easy math for Sean.
But I don't want to do that math, and I don't want people to have to do that math, because this is a big bag of outdated crap.
Oh, I hopefully didn't ruin a joke that you had already written or something like that.
Maybe.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Oh, no, do the spoiler again. No.
Okay.
We got to give you a redo on this, yeah.
Okay. I'll do the clap.
The clap, yeah.
The clap, yep. So if you want a time warning on this spoiler, you're going to have to go back to college if you want, because this math is just not worth it on this outdated bag of crap.
Oh, maybe I got to leave that other stuff in, because then you know, I'm an outdated bag of crap too at 44 years old.
No. You, my friend, have beautifully aged well. This movie has not.
Oh, no, okay? not so much. That is true, yes. We
had a nice discussion before this show started where we talked about Sean's amazing facial hair. He got a new haircut. He has a ring light. This man is looking pristine
today.
That's
right. That's true. So, yeah, there's...
And unlike Animal House...
Yeah.
Sean has aged well, okay?
Yeah,
okay,
the shine hasn't worn off as much on me, yeah. Well, let's talk taglines. The tagline that appears on the poster for this movie, I've got eight. So buckle up, here we go. First, a riotous comedy in a class of its own. Hey, it's there. You know,
I gotta think about that one. Yeah. We'll see what else I got.
Okay, number two, we got to do something. You know what we are going to do? Toga party.
A bit long, a bit on the nose.
Yeah. And don't like the grammatically incorrectness of it, because it is just being a quote from John Belushi. Well, number three, which was from a 1979 re-release of Animal House, guess who's back? The most popular comedy of all time! Exclamation point. There's a lot of exclamation points. Toga Party had an exclamation point. Comedy Class of Its Own also had an exclamation point. Here comes another one with number four. These guys are flunking out of college and loving every moment of it.
No, they're not. That's not even correct. That's incorrect.
They don't really seem to love it that much. They're at least, you know, suppressing their real emotions, I guess, by, you know, trying to have fun. But yeah, no, they're not loving it.
You're right. I just realized that there was no resolution to that. Oh my God, now I have more things to talk about. Continue.
Okay, number five, a comedy from Universal Pictures that will escape sometime this summer. I don't understand the choice of the word escape.
Yeah.
It will escape sometime this summer. Because it's an animal, I guess, but there's no escape in this movie.
No. You're free to go. It's college. You're paying to be there.
Yeah, unless you're escaping the bar. And hitting all the cars on your way out. Anyway, we'll get there.
Nobody can drive in this movie.
Yeah, I'm not ready to get into that conversation yet. Where was I? Holy shit. Okay, number six. We can do anything we want. We're college students.
Clearly not.
That one, no exclamation point. You may have noticed I did put like an exclamation into it. But that one's the one that I definitely feels like should have an exclamation point, and it doesn't. We can do anything we want. We're college students, you know? Well, number seven, relive the best 7 years of your college education.
If that means how long this felt, or how long it felt this movie lasted, then 7 years is correct.
See, so far that's one of the front runners for me.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so I did save my favorite for last. I mean, I sifted through these, and I'm like, I guess this one's the best one. Here we go. Number eight, finally. I feel like David Letterman or something. Holy shit. Okay, number eight. It was the Deltas against the Rules. The Rules lost.
Did they? Like, this is my favorite as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't feel like the Rules lost.
Well, see, and that one's the only one with an ellipses. Oh, no, sorry. The Toga Party one has an ellipses, too. I'm a sucker for an ellipses. I text with ellipses all the time. That's just my way of communicating in text form. I like an ellipses.
I speak in GIF format.
Dot. Yeah, yeah.
I prefer GIF, but, you know, I know GIF is technically correct.
No, I'm team GIF. I also get that. Because, okay... Here we go. First into the weeds. See, for me, it's like it stands for graphic, right? Mm-hmm. That's what the G stands for, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like, well, it's a hard G there. It shouldn't be a soft G when it's abbreviated.
This is true.
Yeah.
This is true.
That's my opinion. But anyway, yeah, back to taglines. That's all I got. I mean, you want more? I only got eight. Jeez, what do you want from me? Well, let's get more from Aaron with a 60-second synopsis.
You ready for this one?
Okay, let's do this.
I feel like this one is not going to be as... Okay, I feel like I've hyped my 60-second synopses up too much, but I'm going to do my best on this one. Hey, pledges. It's time for a good ass spanking because class is in session. Thank you, sir. May I have another? In 1962, two college freshmen are working their way through the typical college experiences of sex, beer, and rock and roll. I would say drugs also, but the only question is, will I go schizo? All of this while trying to ensure their grades don't suffer, because if they do, the dean of Faber College is going to shut down their fraternity. Oh no, Deltas! This steaming pile of mischievousness is your classic comedy vehicle that highlights a time when racism, sexism, rape, and calling your buddies faggot was funny. So if you want a good time, call the professor that your girlfriend is screwing, smoke some reefer, and twist the night away. But don't forget, if you want a real good night at the club, tell a random girl at the female college down the road that your fiancé, her roommate, died. Tell her to bring some friends and then make a mover in a car in the parking lot while your friends are inside and her friends are inside and fearing for their lives in the bar that they thought was a good idea, but not really because you're the only white people in attendance. This movie should stay in the past and let's burn down this Animal House.
Right on. So, I have a unique take on Animal House, because Animal House, before you brought it forth to me, Aaron, was actually something that was going to be on this show at one point, as in I used to like this one. Because this is one of those movies that, I mean, we know that I was a bit of a nerd when I was younger, when I went through my little cinephile phase and whatever. And so this is one of those classic comedies that I was expected to like.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, with it being as old as me, it wasn't really one I sought out, because by the time I was age appropriate to see this movie, it was already that many years old. So why would I go back to visit it, except for the fact that I liked vacation movies and that kind of thing? So this is one that it's like, I want to go back and watch this because I think I liked that movie. I don't know. Like, I should check that one out. But yeah, you brought it forth. You're just right out of the gate. You're like, no. This needs to be on an I hate this one, because, you know, you hate this one. So what is it? What you got a problem with? Why are you picking on Animal House so bad?
I honestly don't. I never had a good reason to hate on this movie. It just, I'm going to say this, like, John Belushi is one of those guys that never really, like, I never really found funny. Like, okay. mainly it was him. And him
shots
being
fired. Shots fired. I'll back you up. I'm not going to disagree. We will talk John Belushi at some point. So go on with your story.
Yes. And so for me, it was just one that, like, I wouldn't say that I ever had the, like, I didn't have, I was indifferent to it because I just had no desire to watch it, but I had no reason to hate it. So I think that I've caught portions of it and I've seen, like, clips and all this stuff, and it just didn't strike me as ever really being funny.
Okay.
But now that I've watched it, like, and you know, obviously growing up in an era, like, several eras where college humor and, like, the college experience is a humorous experience, like, growing up in those eras, I can see where a lot of those movies pulled a lot of influence from this film. Revenge of the Nerds, Van Wilder, which is another National Lampoon's, you know, vehicle. Mm-hmm. Just a lot of, like, movies that I can see where they got their comedy, like haunches from. And this to me, this one, again, like, there's just certain things that I think, had I seen it younger, maybe I would have thought some of it was funny. But at the same time, there was just this weird mix of just, like, over sexualness of you know, like, I just, like, again, the there's just, my head is spinning with the amount of things that I watched in this movie that I was just like, ugh.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, yes, but basically, this is original recipe, and you've seen people improve upon it.
Yes, agreed.
So you see the birth of better things.
Absolutely.
And, yeah, and okay. So, well, let's jump into Animal House. National Lampoon's Animal House. Got to give it its full title. Because, yeah, we got to talk about this. Here we go. Directed by John Landis. Boy, I never realized how many John Landis movies were influences to me when I was younger. Because, I mean, already on this show, we've had Trading Places, Three Amigos, Blues Brothers. So, I'm slowly discovering, as I list off that list, that I'm not as big of a John Landis fan as I would have thought. Produced by Ivan Reitman and Maddie Simmons. You're a grown man named Maddie. Stop it. And written by Harold Ramis, Douglas Kenny, Chris Miller. That joke played better with you than it did in an episode with Colin. I'll let you know that, the Maddie Simmons one. So, hot take, Aaron. You just don't like Harold Ramis written movies.
Apparently not. Like, I'm a little surprised at myself, but maybe.
How do you feel about Stripes? I mean,
I love Stripes.
Okay. Do you still love Stripes, though?
Yes. Yes, okay. I do. Yes, I do. And that might just simply be because it's nostalgic, you know? And yeah. there's not as, I mean, again, I would say it's a little bit obviously more tame than Animal House is.
Yeah. And in case you didn't listen to the episode because you hate the movie so much, we are referring to Harold Ramis in Year One, which was Aaron's other hate movie for the month of June. So, yeah. So, well, here we go. Yeah. We open this movie with, like, you know, college setting. These two guys walking around. And just like any movie that's this old, like, it's just... It's so slow. It takes so long to get up. Like, even Stripes, like, you say you love it,
yeah.
but you got to admit it's slow as fuck.
No. Because when Stripes opens up, we see him as a taxi cab driver, and he's like, you know, he's picking up the fares run off on him. It is slow. I will say it is slow.
It takes them a long time to get to the army, is what I'm saying.
Very true. Very true.
Yeah.
But, like, this one, it's like, dude, like, the two guys, like, I thought that there was going to be, like, some humor thrown into
sight gags.
Yeah
Like, I when they showed the statue, I expected the plaque to be something ridiculously funny, and it's oh no, it's they're playing it straight.
Yeah,
okay.
Like, I'm used to National Lampoon's movies, like, you know, Vegas Vacation, European Vacation, and again Van Wilder, and some of these where it's just like over the top ridiculous humor, like and I didn't feel like any of this was, I mean, yes, a lot of it's ridiculous and over the top, but not funny.
Okay, now, you're going to appreciate this. Check this out for, like, the smoothest podcast, like, expert segue ever. You just mentioned Van Wilder, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right, I appreciate the fact that something like Van Wilder has enjoyed or has taken influence so much from this movie that they even cast Tim Matheson as Van Wilder Sr., you know, the person that has influenced the Van Wilder character.
Very true.
Now, yeah, I mean, Tim Matheson, of course, being in this movie. Now, let's talk about that cast, Aaron.
Woo,
see?
That was...
See? You like that?
Nice.
See, I set that up so that, like, you'd be more impressed when I got to the fact that, boom, we're going to slip right into that cast list because, fuck, we are talking a huge cast here.
Yes, yes.
Oh, my God.
We slipped into this cast like the Delta slipped into a liquor store.
Oh, God. Or a 13-year-old.
Oh, God. I didn't even talk about the pedophilia in this movie.
Oh! Oh, boy.
I think I blocked that out mentally, and you've just brought back some trauma.
Oh, wow. Well, yeah, so... Yeah.
So you got Tom Hulce as Larry Kroger. Stephen Furst is Kent Dorfman.
All right. See, now, okay, as I'm going through my
that's
notes...
right. We got, you wanted to have... I'm sorry. You wanted to have their nicknames also, so I forgot about that. Let me Okay, you want... You want to interject notes, or do you want me to go back and start?
Well, see, here, I'm going to say, right, like, when I'm talking about my notes that I have going on,
yeah,
a lot of my notes just say, yeah, this is the part where that guy does this, because this is my problem with Lord of the Rings, is there's just too many people. There's too many names to remember, and they're all weird names,
yes.
right? So it's like, I don't remember who's Bluto and who's Boone and who's fucking Pinto and D-Day. And it's like, you know, like when I see it down on paper here now, or well, paper, whatever, on my screen now, it's like, okay, I can remember who most of these guys are, but it's so tough with Animal House because I'm so used to these guys older.
You know what, just realizing, is Police Academy part of the National Lampoon series?
No, it is not.
Okay, because, like, that's a lot of this, I could see, like, Police Academy taking a lot of its, like, hijinks from this movie as well. You know what I mean? There's a lot of that stuff going on. But let me switch gears to a different place, because I'm going to go down the cast, and I'm going to include their nicknames.
Like, okay.
So you got John Belushi as John Bluto Blutarski.
Yeah, Bluto. Right. Yeah, Meatloaf was considered as an alternate casting.
Really,
if John, it was if John Belushi for some reason like falls off the wagon and can't do this movie, Meatloaf was ready to step in.
Is John Belushi still alive?
No, oh God, no.
Yeah,
no, he's like one of the 27 Club. Yeah, okay. he was dead a few years after the movie you just watched.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Did he drink himself to death?
More than drinking.
Yeah, probably drugs and such.
Yeah, very much so.
Interesting time that was. You got Tim Matheson as Eric Otter Stratton.
Yeah.
Peter Riegert as Donald Boone Schoenstein.
Riger.
Tom Holtzey as Larry Pinto Kroger.
Now, see, and this is where which one is Pinto?
I want to say Pinto was Dorfman's friend.
Okay, yeah. Okay, now this guy, he's the guy that goes on to play Mozart in Amadeus, isn't he? He won an Oscar.
Oh.
Yeah. If it's the right guy. Yeah. That's the right guy.
Yeah, because I remember, because Kent, so Dorfman and, or Kent and Larry were freshmen that went to the party and they made them, hang out together. And then you got Bruce McGill as Daniel Simpson, D-Day Day. And he's the one that absolutely reminds me of the cop who's always got that really big revolver, the motorcycle cop in Police Academy.
Yeah, true, Tackleberry. But Tackleberry. Bruce McGill is one of those guys that I definitely know him older. Because he's, gray. He's got that gray streaks on the side. Absolutely. Well, nowadays he's probably much older. But
I recognize him mostly from Rizzoli and Isles, if you've ever seen that show.
No.
He plays like a senior detective on that show. It's a pretty good show. You got James Widows as Robert Hoover. Karen Allen as Katie, which is that?
Marianne.
Yep, that's.
Is her debut.
Yes, and later on she played in Indiana Jones. Marion Ravenwood. Yep. Okay. Yeah. And she'll be in the upcoming in the Dial of Destiny.
Oh, is she coming a third time?
I mean, that's personal, but yeah.
Oh. nice.
Hey-o!
She's just breathing hard. we're in Animal House mood.
Yep. Douglas Kenny as Dwayne Storkman. I don't remember him. I don't remember him as one of the guys.
Yeah.
And then you got Christian Miller as Curtis Wayne Hardbar Fuller.
Yeah. And so that's the Deltas.
And then you got...
like this cast, right?
Yeah. Then you got the Omega House. Huh?
Well, see, now I want to say something about the Deltas before we move on to the Omegas.
Okay.
Is that, I guess, originally there was kind of this idea that we would do Saturday Night Live people. So Chevy Chase was going to be Otter, and Boone was written. Harold Ramis wrote it for himself, but then they thought, well, maybe Bill Murray. And D-Day was going to be Dan Aykroyd.
Okay.
And Hoover was going to be Brian Doyle Murray.
I can see all of those. I can see all of those people in those roles.
Right?
Especially Dan Aykroyd.
Yeah. But I guess John Landis didn't want Chevy Chase. So he's like, oh, well.
Oh, that's where he draws the line?
He would be great. It would be great to have you in an ensemble movie like this. Yeah, it's such a great ensemble movie. And Chevy Chase is like, oh, it's not a starring role, and decided to do something else.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Was Caddyshack National Lampoon's?
I don't think so.
No. Now it's going to be like every comedy that's ever came from the era. I'm be like, was that National Lampoon's? National Lampoon? All right. Omega House? James Dotton as Gregory Marmalard. What a weird. And then, I really feel like these guys were absolutely the influence on the I would call the antagonist from Van Wilder.
Yeah, the waspy guys.
Yeah, the Chads. The Chads of the college.
Yeah, that's right.
You got Mark Metcalf as Douglas C. Niedermeyer. And this guy, I was like, oh my god, Kevin Bacon.
His debut. Dylan.
Yes. A lot of debuts, apparently.
I thought Friday the 13th was his debut. And I could have sworn that... So, I could have sworn I said that during our Friday the 13th episode.
Wasn't Friday the 13th 70s?
No. No. Friday. Oh. Well, this is 70s, though. This is 78.
Oh, yeah, it is. I'm sorry. I don't know why. No. Oh, because the movie was in 62.
Now I have to. Yeah, now I'm going to fact check myself here. But yeah, and then we got, who else? We got the girls, too, in Omega House.
Yep, you got Mary Louise Weller as Mandy Pepperidge, and then Martha Smith as Barbara Sue Babs Jansen. And Barbara Sue Babs, her mouth, she had this like grin that just every time I saw her like speak or smile, it just like it killed me. Like I thought she was gonna like if she didn't become like a cannibal at some point in her life, I'd be surprised. Oh, she bothered me.
Yeah. Friday the 13th was 1980.
80. Okay. So others, you got John Vernon as Dean Vernon Wormer, Verna Bloom as Mrs. Marion Wormer, Donald Sutherland as Professor Dave Jennings. And Donald Sutherland, what a smooth
what
guy.
What a stud.
What a stud. Yeah.
What a stud.
The ass on Donald Sutherland, huh?
Yep.
Cesar Danova as Mayor Carmine DePasto. Sarah Holcomb as Claretta DePasto. And Dwayne Jesse as Otis Day.
Yeah, and now I always grew up thinking that Otis Day was a real person. And then I found out that after this movie, he actually legally changed his name to Otis Day and toured as Otis Day in the Nights.
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah. That's a bit of trivia for you.
Yeah. So there you go. Yeah. The more you know.
Oh, man. This friggin' movie. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Watching this movie now, it's...
Tell me about
it. I struggled with it. Yeah, I know. I'm trying to unpack this.
It's a lot to unpack because I think going into it, you're just thinking that you're going to get this raucous like comedy of like dudes drinking beer and like and then you're gonna get them going through shenanigans like pretty much every college humor movie we've seen. They're gonna get into trouble, they're gonna fix the situation, and it's gonna be resolved, and everybody's gonna like end up happily ever after.
Okay, well, here I'm going to attack it this way. Let's go back to, I don't understand John Belushi.
No, I
don't get the appeal. Now, I mean, you know, I guess some of the Saturday Night Live stuff he was in might have been kind of funny, but I don't crack at a lot of stuff that John Belushi does. And for me, in this movie, one of the only things that I smiled at was the scene of him going down the cafeteria line, stuffing his face and everything like that. But like the I'm a zit, I don't get it. And it's strange that someone like Chris Farley just idolized John Belushi.
Yeah.
Because I love Chris Farley.
But Chris Farley had, I feel like he had depth to him. He had like his comedy had depth. John Belushi to me was just, I mean, I have not seen the entirety of John Belushi's like comedic catalog, so forgive me, but he just seemed like a loud, obnoxious, just asshole.
Mm-hmm.
And
this was sober John Belushi. Apparently, he actually stayed clean filming this movie.
Maybe that's why he wasn't funny. I mean,
zing.
I'm not trying to be a dick or anything, but you know, I guess, to me, this, and again, maybe this is the humor, like that my humor has evolved past this point, but I can't imagine. I'd like to meet somebody that this is like their favorite movie still.
Yeah. And there probably are. I mean, spoiler alert for reviews, but we got some high numbers.
This
coming.
Is true.
I mean,
and they're probably all like old, I was going to say like older gentlemen that like, you know, grew up with this film.
Yeah. I mean, this is one that I can look back on my own life and know that there have been times that I have done the wrong thing. I have said the wrong thing. I have rapped along to lyrics before I knew that I shouldn't be rapping along to lyrics. I'll leave it at that, right? And so now I look at a movie like this because I know I'm not supposed to be saying some of these things anymore. It's like, I look at this and I hate to be one of these guys that's, meh, it's so unpolitically correct, but it's like I look at this and I find funny moments, mm-hmm. but I also just, so much of it is just like, you can't do that. You can't say that. Like, I'll talk about one example, the pedophilia joke, mm-hmm. right? It's like, to make her age so extremely young, like she's not 17, she's 13.
Yeah.
Right?
This is the guy that molested me last month.
But that line made me laugh. But like everything else about it was kind of like, no. But that line ultimately did make me laugh. So it's like, this is this terrible thing. It was just because of how she phrased it with, this is the guy that molested me last month. Right. And it's just, it was a funny line to me. It would be something I'd laugh at with a stand up comedian. Yeah. That one moment, that punchline made it worth it for me. But I just felt so icky before I got to that punchline because of everything else with that story.
I was waiting for a like, gotcha. Like, I'm not 13 type thing. Like, I was waiting for that to kind of like come out. So I noticed that like this is like, you know, John Belushi's like, you know, breakout movie role. So maybe he had some other stuff that was funnier. But like, I'm looking at this movie and I'm just like, I'm thinking to myself, I know there's like this school of thought that sometimes you have to look at movies through a lens of mm-hmm. how people may have seen it when it was coming out.
Yeah.
But is that the correct way to approach any film? Like, should you, I mean, okay, that would be like me watching something like, you know, Roots or Amistad, you know, from when it was out and thinking that, like, you know what, like, oh, that's funny, you know, or something like that. Yeah. Like when it came out, like it was less of an issue or maybe, I mean, I don't know. I cannot do that. I cannot go into a situation like this, look at a movie like this and be like, okay, I see how that was funny back in the day, or I see how that was acceptable back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
But no, you know, like, and I'm not trying to be like somebody who just like destroys all the fun. But for me, like, just, I guess maybe the things that I've been through, maybe the things that I've seen, I just like, I couldn't find the humor in a lot of what was going on here.
Oh, not in at least 80% of it.
Yeah. Like there was a scene where they even try to do like the devil and the angel on the shoulder when this apparently 13-year-old girl passed out and he like his devil on his shoulder is telling him just to go for it. And then the angel's like, don't touch her. And he's like really thinking about it. Like that's fucked up humor.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, it's the punchline of it all as well is that it's like homo. That's how the devil signs off is it's like because he doesn't rape a passed out, which we will eventually find out is a child. Yet he's called a homo for his trouble as well. And so it's like, oh, so even your button is terrible. OK, awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. Terrible joke all the way through. Outstanding.
That was,
but back then it was funny. But I don't understand how it is with who I am now. Absolutely. I 100% agree with you that, it's not funny to me and I can't even understand why it was funny at any time.
That I think, and I want to say like, cause to go through, to sum up the real, I guess, synopsis of this movie, you know, this is your typical college film where have you ever seen PCU?
No.
Okay, so it's a politically correct university or PCU. PCU is from 1994. It's Jeremy Piven, David Spade, John Favreau. I love it's the movie's hilarious, okay? But it's okay. This is one of those ones that I could have seen this Animal House like following this type of storyline where basically you have the college fraternity that gets in trouble for their shenanigans. The dean says you either have to pay your fines or do this, whatever, to fix the situation, and then you're going to be off of suspension and you're going to be able to continue doing what you got to do and graduate, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. That's the way I was expecting this movie to go. But another reason that there are movies that I generally really, really hate, and I'm going to tell you this, I am a huge fan. I love Resolution. And now that we are talking about this movie, I realize there's no resolution. Yeah. There's no resolution. These guys in Delta get, like, they basically steal the answers to this test. They're the wrong answers. They take the test. They all fail. And the dean says, you're all failing, so you're all now expelled. We're shutting down your fraternity. Get out. Yeah. And that's, and besides a what is borderline attempted murder in several pieces, other than that, like, this movie has no resolution or outcome that finalizes anything in a positive way.
Yeah, but Aaron, that's what the words across the screen at the end are. You get a nice neat little bow on every little on every storyline.
Okay, sure. Yeah. Sure.
See? There you go.
Fine.
You got your resolution. No, I see what you mean.
You have a point.
But it does end in the middle of chaos.
It does. Absolutely.
And it's like, and by the way, these wacky things happened. Yeah.
Oh, man. And at one point, John Belushi's character kidnaps a woman. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's like literally, several people attempt murder. That's mm-hmm. all I'm going to say.
Yeah. No, these are not good dudes. Like, nobody when they does. Come back with the wrecked car and they want to tell his brother, right? They're like, well, we'll chop it up and report it stolen. It's like, that's your first instinct?
Yeah.
We're going to chop shop this shit? Okay. Oh, you're not good dudes.
No. I think that's the answer. There's not a single good person in this movie.
Yeah. Yeah, ultimately, I gotta go back to the cast list. Ultimately, I don't think there is.
There's not. Every single person in this movie does something terrible. Even Katie, the girlfriend, who cheats on, is it Boone? I think it cheats on Boone with Sutherland.
Well, yeah, because everyone at the very least is an accomplice to many things. Yeah, because I was thinking maybe Dorfman is a little bit innocent, but... Because nothing jumps out at me just off the bat, but it's like, well, yeah, but he would have gone along with the chop shop idea. Yeah.
And where did he get a girlfriend that came from out of town?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what I really want to know.
She's pretty hot, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go Dorfman. I mean, I think Dorfman is, like, the most likable of all the characters. I mean, I guess Babs gives out hand jobs, so that's pretty neighborly. That's right, neighborly right there.
Well, Mandy and Babs, they both. Why the rubber gloves?
Because it's funny, I guess.
I didn't understand it.
It just shows that it's more of like a literal job.
Oh, got it. That could make sense. Yeah, I could see that. Okay. Yeah,
because she's not really into it, and neither is he, obviously.
No,
but...
is it supposed to be this soft?
Yeah, that's something that got a snort chuckle from me, I guess, was, you know, a line like that. Okay, well, before we get terribly into the negative, I'm going to focus on a couple of the things that I did legitimately laugh at.
Okay.
Yeah. Much like Napoleon Dynamite, a lot of them were animal related. The horse was hilarious to me. Him going in and, like, deciding not to shoot the horse, but it has a heart attack anyway, that was funny. And then the guy measuring the door to get the horse out and
that,
he comes in with the chainsaw.
I want to say that was the only funny reason, like, the only reason I think I might have laughed in this movie was the chainsaw.
Yeah. Even the setup with the gun I thought was funny. No, it's blanks. And then the horse has a heart attack anyway.
Yeah.
The fact that the horse dies anyway, yeah. That was a funny moment to me, so I'll give a shout out to that one. When they're getting kicked out of the house, when they're pulling the cow out, I thought that was kind of funny. Yeah. Yeah, so... Okay, so let's get back into the hate, because I just listed off everything. Seriously, I did chuckle, here and there. There, some of the lines that were going on were funny to me. But just overall, it was so few and far between. And it just... I don't know if you've ever been a live comedy watcher or just even stand up on TV, but you know, when there's a comic that's not doing well, you can feel it. And to me, a lot of the time it's like, no, these jokes aren't hitting, man.
Yeah.
These jokes, you need to be using different material, and they're just not going to do it because it's 1978.
Different.
Do better, 1978.
Very different generation of humor.
Yeah.
Very different generation of just, I don't know, like you got the I feel like this movie must have been made at a very like transitional point in comedy, where maybe this was one of the very first of just like raunchy like college humor movies, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, because again, a lot of this stuff was just like, oh, you know, you had the ROTC guys. You really didn't have any like sports, which I thought was kind of odd. You know, so that threw me off.
I don't understand what this university is. And again, maybe this is like the difference between being Canadian and American again. But yeah,
why
do we have military going on? But it seems like we've got military mixed with civilian. And is that something that you would see in a university? Because I don't know anything about that kind of thing.
Yeah, you do. So in colleges here, we have the ROTC programs. Like in high schools, we have Junior Recruit Officer Training Corps. Okay. And then in college, you have the Recruit Officer Training Corps.
Oh, maybe that's what the cadets are here.
Yeah, cadets. Okay. Yeah. So that's what they call the cadets in colleges. And a lot of the times, those like students are actually already like on a like a fast track, like they'll go through this ROTC program, and it's like a pre-course to joining the military. So they might get like rank, or they might get some additional time, or they're doing it for like, you know, their college to be paid for. It's, you know, it's part of their you know, their program, their I forget what it's called, but it's like a fast track into the military. So
okay, so now part of my question then also started becoming, are there only two fraternities on this campus? The one with the military guys and the one with the,
well, no, because some
party animals.
Some of the party animals were in the ROTC program.
That's true. Yes, because Dorfman was.
Yeah, I another question is there only one horse?
Maybe only the commander gets the horse.
That's a terrible equestrian program.
There's a big stable.
There's only like, two girls.
Yeah.
Or three. Yeah. There's only three girls.
Yeah, three girls. Yeah, because Katie.
There's only like 20 guys in the ROTC program.
There's also only one professor.
Yeah, there's only one professor. And there's only one, like, and for some reason, they go into a trial.
Yeah. Yeah. And he teaches literature. So this literature professor.
One dean and, also.
But yeah, one dean. But yeah, in the trial, so do they have law at this ROTC Academy school?
It's a military law with a focus in English.
Mm. Yeah, that degree. Right, one of the most common degrees. How did I forget, like, yes, you know, the number one top
choice? Of course.
It's like when you can't hit number one on Family Feud. It's like,
yeah,
what is the number one answer? There should be 89 people that said it.
This fucking school. This school makes zero sense. But they do have a good size feel. And also, apparently, it's okay. As the dean, mm-hmm, we're going to blatantly ignore the hazing, the violence, just all the negativity that these jocks, these like eight jocks are doing against the Deltas, but we're going to get upset at the Deltas for having bad grades.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're going to invent some sort of secret double probation.
Yeah. Secret double probation.
because I guess that's a loophole. If he wants to get rid of them, why doesn't he just get rid of them?
I mean, the fact that they have livestock in their house.
Yeah.
Seems like a good enough reason.
I don't know.
Or several or several vehicles that apparently have no use, just sitting on the... Like, why didn't they use those cars to create a death machine?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, no, we can't touch Boone's Corvette.
Yeah. No, I'm talking about the ones that didn't, that were just, like, sitting in the yard that didn't even have wheels.
Oh, yeah, those ones, too. Yeah. Like, yeah, it's just a scrap yard, basically.
That, and how does Boone have a Corvette?
Mm-hmm. How much glass is on that carpet in that room?
Oh, because the broken bottles?
Yeah. Well, see, and, oh, sorry, I'll go, one more comment about the Corvette. Yeah, not only does he have the Corvette, but he's also got, like, the pimped out, room as well.
Yes.
So he's got the one nice house in this house of glass.
And he also, and we also see his butt, too.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, we at least represent with the male nudity in this movie.
I will say this, two things. I know for a fact, and maybe I've been lied to my entire life, but topless pillow fights, I have been told, are a myth.
See, I know, right? I don't want to believe it, but I've just heard it too often. I mean, I think that's the conspiracy. I think they don't want to tell us that it actually, like, you know, first rule of Fight Club, right? You know, this is first rule of topless pillow fight club. You don't talk about topless pillow fight club.
And then the girl in the next room, like, nobody hears Bluto, like,
hopping with the ladder. That was kind of funny to me as well.
It was a little funny. It was a little ridiculous. Nobody saw it. But then the fact that, like, the girl who's, you know, getting naked and is about to, like, you know, obviously, like, touch herself, does not see him, like, plainly staring in the window at her.
Yes. Well, I guess the conceit is that she is in a well-lit room and he is in the dark. But for the sake of the camera, we are lighting him up.
Yeah.
That, I mean, that's the only... But this goes back to, you know, let's pretend we're in 1978, and why was it funny back then?
Yeah.
But then I have to do too much mental gymnastics to make that work for me. Okay, now, I want to talk time period.
Okay.
Because this is a tough one for me, because anything before I was born is the olden days. So, I mean, I am still younger than this movie, so that was the olden days. And so, I don't understand them at all. So, I get certain aspects of them, but to me, 1978 is no different than 1962 because I never lived through it.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of these jokes for me hit as 1978, but then a lot of them, it's like I also had to put it through the lens of, oh yeah, it's 1962.
I think I'm falling into that trap as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm very much falling into that trap as well, because I'm thinking that this is a 1960s film, but it's not. Yes. It's a late 70s, like, movie, and
they're in the 60s still, though. Yeah.
It doesn't make it any better. None of this makes it any better.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like, it's kind of like Dirty Dancing. Like, with Dirty Dancing, oh, well, that was the 60s, so it was scandalous back then. You know, so,
true.
Okay. But nowadays, it's nothing. So, it's tough because, yeah, you have to put it through so many filters for this movie to hit you right. Like, to me, with where cannabis legalization has come in this world throughout you know, I mean, we've got it nationally here. I mean, you witnessed me smoking a joint before we started this recording. It's so funny to see this portrayal of, hey, you want to smoke some reefer? Like,
oh.
It's very reefer madness. Whoa, I'm not going to go schizo, am I?
Exactly, and exactly.
It's so seedy. It's so underground. And it's like, yeah, now cancer patients use it.
Yeah. Well, and he's like, you know, he's got the jazz music going on. They're having the deep conversation where his mind's being blown. Like,
yeah.
Like the universe is in the atom on the fingertip or the fingernail of some giant being. It's like, whoa, man,
20 years later, that guy wrote Men in Black.
Yes.
Or at least the ending of it. Yeah, it was hilarious to me. He draws all the curtains and locks the door. He chains the door. Whoa, you know.
I honestly thought that there was going to be like a romantic moment between the professor and all of those students.
Yeah, that's right.
But that's my dirty mind. You know, I draw the curtains, lock the door, put on some sexy jazz music, and let's smoke some weed.
That's right. That's right. It's going to be just a sexy party.
It's a very sexy party.
Well, now, I want to talk racism. Let's do this. Let's get into racism. Because, again, this is another one where it's like, certain things I understand as maybe being funny in 1978, but then some of it I'm wondering, like, you know, where's the 1962 of it all? Now, pardon my ignorance, because I am Canadian, so we weren't as well, at least my generation, wasn't as well raised on, like, the civil rights movement.
Okay.
So, 1962, this is pre-Martin Luther death, or Martin Luther King death, because he was 68. And then this is also pre-JFK, because he was 63.
Mm-hmm.
So where were we with, like, integration? Like, okay, with year one, you laughed at some of the inconsistencies and the plot holes there. I'm wondering about historical accuracy. Like, strangely, things like that actually interest me when it comes to something like this. So,
well, the interesting thing about this movie is that it's hard to gauge where they were, or at least where they placed it, because I think that they intentionally avoided the situation by not addressing it.
Yeah.
And the one time they did address it, which you see, is the only time that you actually see black people is, well, I mean, okay, so you have them performing.
The band.
You have the band performing, Otis Day. You have them performing, I want to say, at the Delta House.
Yes, for some reason.
And then later on, you have them, you know, go to this club, and Otis Day happens to be there in this club, which is obviously, very obviously,
not
a white person's club. And so, I mean, there's obvious, and there's like so much I could address in this, but it's like you have the animosity, you have the racial tension, you have at one point a guy pulls a switchblade on one of the Delta boys, and then also like they're just in the corner. You have this portrayal of overly aggressive black men when they literally rip the table off the floor and say, "Can I dance with your girl?" You know, it's like there's,
and one of the first lines is, "We're gonna die" when they walk in.
Yep.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, but I look at this, and then later on, when it comes to the floats at the parade, that's just batshit crazy, but we'll talk about that. One of the floats is a white hand and a black hand holding hands that says Unity Together.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I'm like, 1962, I don't know if that's accurate. Especially given that we have the one club that seems to be like as some sort of segregation club or something like that.
Yeah.
So where are we in history?
Yeah.
And
I didn't understand that either, because very much so in the way that they were portraying this college and not really going into depth at all on any backstory or any back really like I guess you call it like scene building of this college itself, giving it character. They never even talk about it, nor do they show a black person on campus.
It doesn't look like integration has happened at this campus yet. I mean, the funny thing is that it was filmed in Eugene, Oregon, and they didn't have enough black actors in the area or even black people to be able to fill this club. So they had to bust in a bunch from Portland in order to fill this club. So even in 1978, where they filmed itself was a very white place anyway. Mm-hmm. And that was 16 years later. I mean, I was raised in Canada at a time when there was the like two or three black families that went to school with me.
Mm-hmm.
And that was about it. Nowadays, we are definitely a much more multicultural city. But yeah, growing up, I was like Oregon. Not very many black people anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So but I don't know what 1978 or what 1960, that's where the muddy waters of time come in, where it's like, I don't know what's what with where, because if I'm hearing even in 1978, this town's too white.
Yeah, pardon me, but I don't think I'm going to give too much credit to National Lampoon's to really research into
that's fair.
the mingling of races was in the early 60s, let alone late 70s.
Yeah. The only thing I can say for 1978 is it felt like at least anyone that was a person of color in this movie seemed to be portrayed by a person of color.
That's fair.
Because there was also like the Korean kid and the Indian kid that they meet at the party, where the asshole guys casually keep pawning them off on who is obviously the nerds. What is unfortunate there, though, is that all of those rejects aren't part of Delta House. I mean, for me, that's what Monsters University was all about, is it's like, oh, OK University is where all the rejects go. It's too bad that we didn't see Rajesh come back or, you know, something like that.
They were there for a joke. But that is a very, very good point.
But it wasn't a guy in brown face.
It wasn't. But you make such a good point, like, that it would have been great for them. I mean, obviously, again, before the time of really incorporating other, you know, races, religions. Here's the other thing. The scene itself, inherently racist and inherently just bigoted because of the fact that we're calling this
That's
one...
That's the punchline.
Yeah. He's Muhammad, Rajesh. You got, and then you got the blind cripple, as you call mm-hmm. him, in the wheelchair over in the corner with the cane. He's in a wheelchair with a cane, and I'm just like...
The only thing they were missing was, like, a guy in a feather boa or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I mean, and saying, like, and I don't know if this is a bad thing or it's a good thing, but thinking of feather boa, I would watch Revenge of the Nerds way more than I would watch this. That movie had so much quality to it, so much life.
Yeah. Yeah.
And resolution.
This one, like, for a frat house that where everyone in the upper echelons is that cool, like, it's like, no, like, they should all be, like, they're all too cool, I guess.
Well, that's the question, though, also, because you got guys they? like what was his name? Like Dune and Otter, like, or Boone and Otter?
Boone,
they're well-to-do. They're not, like, schlubs.
No.
Why aren't they part of the Omegas?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Because they want to drive golf balls towards animals instead.
Weird.
this movie. It's the time period that has me thrown off.
Absolutely.
You should have just said it in 1978. I don't know. Because, like, they go through, like, because, okay, here's where my mind really goes. Is because I'm scanning the backgrounds while I'm watching these movies, and I see something like Silly Putty. And I'm like, did Silly Putty exist in 1962? Right? Or is it like they just didn't think of, like, actually making it accurate? Oh, what's the real truth? But, you know, I think it's time for Sponsorship Corner! Always on the lookout for product placements and movies. This week, National Lampoon's Animal House is brought to you by Budweiser and Pabst Blue Ribbon Beers, Jack Daniel's Tennessee Whiskey. However, the bottle he chugs is actually iced tea.
Oh.
Cadillac, but but apparently if you look at the car in the background, you can see glass already in the door of the car. So there have already been multiple takes of this. How much liquid did John Belushi have in him? Like, who cares whether it's alcoholic or not? That's just plain a lot of liquid. Cadillac, Buick, and Ford vehicles, Coca-Cola, Hammersmith graphic copy. That was a cool machine. Nestor and Lipton, Mazola Oil, Cheerios, Cheez-Its, Winston and Salem cigarettes, Silly Putty, Sears, and Playboy magazine. And then, much like Blues Brothers, the only other John Belushi movie I've ever seen, by the way, as far as I know. Like, you did mention that I don't know his catalog. I think Blues Brothers might be one of the only ones I've ever seen of him. But in Blues Brothers, I felt like a lot of the cases where we're going to be filming on your street, if you don't want your sign to be seen, cover it up. So these ones were on the main street, McCoy's Pharmacy, Hoover Shoes, Leo's Rexall Drugs, Hamilton, Coast to Coast Stores, and Homestead Furniture, and the probably fictional Dexter Lake Club and the Rainbow Motel. And this has been Sponsorship Corner. That graphic copy machine, I really like that. And for that to be maybe that's why it was set in 1962. They're like, oh, in 1978, they're not using this. Mm-hmm. But to be able to have the entire linchpin of this plot be because we can switch out what the Xerox copy is.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Maybe that's why they set it in 1962. They couldn't think of a better idea.
No, that was the entire plot rested on that one thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They steal a lot of meat.
They do.
That's a lot of meat. Like, I'm just thinking about, like, the current inflation prices that seem to be going on at supermarkets right now, and it's just like, man.
And everybody was very worried about the food mart, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Can a 13-year-old even work?
That's a good question.
Like, 14, I think, is the minimum age here to, like, legally work in a retail setting.
I don't know. Recently, there was a news story where they found, like, two 10-year-olds working at a McDonald's somewhere in the United States.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Wow. Did they just, the early growth spurt, and they're like, no, we're 14.
I don't know. Just make them, keep them in the back cooking fries.
Shit too. Yeah.
That's why the shake machines never work.
Yeah, that's you dropped the hard F-bomb in the 60-second synopsis, and I gotta say that's also like a reaction that I don't know whether 1962 was a time that word was around as well.
I feel like it wasn't.
Yeah, like just like even homo was the one that threw me off too, where it's like, was that even used? Like, I think it might have been. But yeah, like, there's just something about having the extra got on the end. Fay got.
Yeah.
Right? And it just didn't feel 1962. But it also just, like, it's nails on a chalkboard when he starts. And because they're slipping on marbles? Come on, man.
Yeah, it's like that was like, what? Like, why is that even a thing?
Even if that was an insult I still approved of, why in this situation is that what they are? Yeah. No, you have to save that for an appropriate one.
Was that Kevin Bacon that was yelling that?
No, that was okay. Niedermeyer. Yeah.
Yeah, Niedermeyer. I want to know how Niedermeyer feels about that scene now.
Yeah, probably not so good.
Yeah.
I wonder that with a lot of... Like, even when Karen Ellen says, ah, Boone, you're such a retard, or whichever one.
Like, right out the gate. And right out the gate.
Okay, so, yeah, we're going hard R right there. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. I remember writing that down in my notes. I was like, oh, right, we're starting off very offensive right out the gate.
Yeah. Yeah, oh, yeah, that's, yeah, she's in love with a retard, too, is also what it is, or something like that.
There was that one, I want to say within the first 5 minutes, because I forget the line, but there's the line when Dorfman and Pinto are at the door and he tells him to take his hat off because he looks like a, I don't remember, like he looks gay or something.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. Well, and then, you know, shortly after that, they find out that Boone and Otter are up in the room because they're well-known homosexuals.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's just, okay, so, yeah, we're just coming in, guns blazing with some, you know, homophobic language or homophobic jokes. And you know, I gotta say, nothing says romance when you're contemplating raping your 13-year-old passed-out date than a Confederate flag hanging on the wall. That was just that extra pièce de résistance that just threw that extra scene in that moment, you know.
Yeah.
Like, ah, yeah. Oh, everything is perfect in this scene. Was my thought. Wow.
What a magical night.
Got a child. We got passed out. We got contemplating molestation. And yeah.
Again, like at the end of the day, looking at the end of the movie, looking back on all this and being like, oh, that was a good movie. There is never a point in my life that I think that I would ever be able to say that about this film.
Yeah. Yeah, I appreciate certain moments of it. I can find positives in it. I honestly can. Because some of the jokes were funny. Some of the moments were funny. But overall, it's like, do I ever want to watch this again? No.
No.
I already watched this 3 years ago when it was supposed to be on. I used to like this one. And even back then, I was like, eh. Now I'm looking at it with this perspective of this is a movie that you absolutely loathe. And I'm like, you know what? Yeah, I don't have to pretend that I like John Belushi anymore because I really don't think Cheeseburger, 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 Cheeseburger is that funny anymore. No. I know that's not this movie. Like the guitar smashing is supposed to be one of the most hilarious moments ever. And what I find funnier is the fact that that house, that frat house, it is a real frat house they filmed in. They have decided to put a frame around that hole in the wall because that's the only damage that actually happened to this house during filming. Was he put a hole in the wall with the guitar?
I find that hard to believe.
Yeah. And so they have put a frame around it with a little brass plaque that... Yeah, this hole was put here by John Belushi.
John Belushi was here.
That is funnier to me than him actually smashing the guitar.
Yeah. I would say, like, and not to jump ahead to, like, you know, giving opinions, but I would say that if I had to say anything about this movie, I can appreciate the impact that this movie had on comedy going forward.
Yes.
But I cannot appreciate this film.
No. I have succinct responses on that because I think you and I have very much decided we might be on the same page with this once we get to the end. Now, I want to, though, before, you know, we get to... I don't know how much more we have to talk about because I feel like there's still more layers that we could peel away. But I do want to get to the John Landis of it all.
Okay.
I definitely have to say that because... I did say up at the top that I'm beginning to think that I don't really like John Landis comedies that much. I did still enjoy Three Amigos, but Trading Places was another one that had me going, "Ee, you shouldn't be saying that anymore," and stuff like that. And same with whatever the other one I mentioned was. Oh, yeah, Blues Brothers. Blues Brothers was another one where it's like, eh, I don't get it.
I mean, if we're gonna talk John Landis, there are a few in his... in his portfolio that I do, like American Werewolf in London, Three Amigos, loved it, yes. Coming to America, Beverly Hills Cop.
Oh, we've done both of those.
And then even the Michael Jackson music video he's done, Thriller, which were Thriller and Black or White.
Yeah.
Both of those very much, I mean, all of those very much enjoyed, but I can just say that, you know, for me, Blues Brothers is not really ever entertaining. National Lampoon's Animal House, no. I have actually never seen Trading Places.
Yeah. It doesn't hold up. Dan Aykroyd in blackface was one of those moments where I go, okay, Dan Aykroyd's never had to apologize for that. Where's his apology? I looked when we did that episode. But okay, now, I mean, here's another, but my John Landis of it all, having watched a lot of those movies you just mentioned on this show, we haven't ever done American Werewolf in London, but yeah, Trading Places. There's always a moment in a John Landis film where it just feels like he goes, fuck it, I don't know, let's do something weird.
Mm-hmm.
So in Trading Places, there is a moment where there's like this weird heist that's happening on a train, and Dan Aykroyd's in blackface, and for some reason, Jim Belushi, not John Belushi, his brother Jim, is there in a monkey costume, or like a gorilla costume. It gets wacky and weird, yeah, and just goes off the rails. Three Amigos, as much as I love Three Amigos, the shit in the desert gets weird, right? Like them singing the lullaby with all the animals, the mm-hmm. singing bush. It goes on this wacky little detour for a little while. I've just discovered a lot of his movies do that. And for me, in this scene, it's like the parade. What the fuck? I mean, I guess this is supposed to be the big climax to it, but it just gets weird.
Yeah. Jesus.
But it does provide me one of the only other laughs I had in this movie. The girl falling through the kid's window. He's reading Playboy.
Yeah.
Thank you, God. Great line.
I did chuckle at that.
Great fucking line. And that kid is a pastor now.
Wow.
So thank you, God, indeed. That kid went and found God, and he is a pastor in Oregon.
Good for him.
Yeah.
Good for him.
So see, Animal House turned people around. I mean, one guy won an Oscar after this. The other guy, you know, he became a pastor, man of God, man of the cloth. Now that I have seen this, though, at an older age, I can't, and you've brought it up a few times, the influences on comedy, I can go back and appreciate a bit more some of the things that I've seen that, like, absolutely rip this off.
Mm-hmm.
Like Futurama. There's an, you know, or I mentioned Monsters University. There's a college episode of The Simpsons, you know, like the ones mm-hmm. that actually do the things like panty raids and stuff. Like I really, you know, it really is very much. Yeah. A lot of people have done this better now.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
But I'm glad it exists, because otherwise those wouldn't have existed. I mean, Stifler's mom wouldn't have existed if this guy hadn't fucked the dean's wife.
True.
Yeah, it's all got to come from somewhere. Otis Day would have never existed. He'd still be named Duane.
Duane.
There were moments at the hearing that I thought were funny as well. And, you know, I gotta admit that I do like a good bad guy. When there's a bad guy that you're like, oh my god, I hate you, I want to strangle you myself. And in the end, like, the three of them ganging up on these guys, it's like, okay, none of these people in Delta House are redeemable whatsoever. But, I mean, you gotta let the guy talk.
Yeah.
I mean, Hoover's trying. Like, it's like, dude, let the guy talk. It's not fair.
And it's funny because in so many movies, again, we talk about where this movie is probably influenced. Again, Revenge of the Nerds, you know, there was a scene where they had to defend. I mean, pretty much every single one of the movies, they had to defend their fraternity.
Yeah.
You got Van
Billy
Wilder,
Madison.
Billy Madison. Like so many of these where it's like, okay, or even what was it called? Old School.
Yeah,
you know, old school had to be definitely influenced by this. So many of them with these scenes of, you know, like courtroom, you know, discussion. Accepted. Accepted. You know,
love Accepted. Like you've really just named like seven movies that I absolutely love, and I 100% see how they have roots in Animal House. But I would rather watch every one of those movies right now than ever, you know, even yes. think of this one again.
back to back. I would just rather instead of, yeah.
Yeah.
Ask me about my wiener.
Ask me about my wiener. Oh. No one is a good person.
Nobody. They're all terrible fucking Katie's people in that
fucking
movie.
Her teacher. Like, you did compliment Donald Sutherland in his ass.
Yes.
He did go pantsless in that scene so that Karen Allen would go pantsless. He felt it wasn't fair that they were exploiting just her.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is the shot of her, like, pulling down her nightdress or whatever. So you see her butt, too.
Mm-hmm.
So he's like, okay, I'll go assless. And she's like, well, if Donald Sutherland's going ass,
yeah. Pantsless. Way assless? To go, Donald.
I said assless?
Yeah.
Yeah, pantsless, I mean. Yeah.
Way to go, Donald. I can. Okay. Way to go, buddy.
Yeah.
Way to good take for one for him. The team.
Yeah, that's right. And, hey. We're talking about your ass 44 yes. years later. Okay. I finally did the math. It's 44. That end scene, the pirates, they're a death mobile. John Belushi is abducting people. The marching band is stupid enough that they'll stay marching into an alley. Yep. I mean, like, that's the one of the only parts that actually felt National Lampoon out of this National Lampoon movie was, oh, okay, this marching band is doing wacky shit. Like, that end scene felt like a National Lampoon movie, but it still wasn't funny to me. But
yeah.
Compared to everything else, it's like, well, okay, this is the National Lampoon part.
Yeah. And that's what I'm saying. Like, all these other National Lampoon films that I've seen, not a single one of them was ever... Like, again, Christmas Vacation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think really any of that was ever offensive. Like, if you can give me an offensive moment in that movie, tell me. You know? But, like, it was good. You know, Vegas Vacation, European Vacation. Like, those were good. And I don't remember really any of them being, severely offensive to any, you know, race, creed, religion, or anything.
Well, we just did European Vacation. So, European Vacation wasn't that bad. No.
Yeah.
It was still pretty funny overall. Yeah. All of these movies, you're still going to find the occasional use of a word that you wouldn't use in your own life anymore. But, yeah, it's not this. It's not this. I mean, like, when we got to the end and he's yelling the hard F, it for me, at that point, it's like, oh, good, we've gotten almost every offensive term we can. I mean, at least we said the Negroes stole our dates, but...
I think
that's so, the 1962 of it all for me, where I'm like, okay, I guess, but no, I hate that.
At the end of the day, we just know that anybody that needs to watch this movie needs to have, like, an offensive bingo card.
Yeah. Yeah, oh, yeah, or a drinking game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's an Animal House drinking game out there already.
There's got to be so many. Yeah, and then we get the punchlines for everybody where, Eric Strauss, of course, is a gynecologist in Beverly Hills.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, the one guy that was a pig the whole way through, he's a gynecologist. And then we get, you know, Marmalade or whatever his name was. He's a Nixon White House aide that gets raped in prison in 1974. Yeah,
another piece of humor that didn't land for me.
Yeah. Which Niedermeyer goes to Vietnam and gets killed by his own troops. That one was kind of funny to me. Because, like, you know, that guy was such an asshole the whole way through.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I said earlier that I like a good villain, and I don't know if I ever finished that thought. But, those three ganging up on them, they were such an asshole. I felt so bad that they weren't letting the Deltas talk. That where it's like, I can see how this guy... That was one of the ones where it's like, okay, that one's kind of funny. And, you know, I guess Bluto being a senator... Mrs. John Blutarsky.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, so this woman he abducted ends up marrying him and he becomes a senator.
Was it called Munchausen something? Or is that, what is the one where you fall in love with your kidnapper?
Oh, that's Stockholm.
Stockholm, yeah.
Yeah. And Babs works at Universal Studios.
Yeah.
And when at Universal, ask for Babs.
I will do that.
That's next time. That's the card at the end. And apparently when this movie first came out, if you did that, the legend is that you would get a discount on your admission if you went up to the front and get, say, ask for Babs. Now, the legend is iffy about whether it was a discount or whether it was free admission to Universal Studios.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, it was actually like this like secret promotion. I guess it's not honored anymore.
Oh,
you can't go to Universal and ask for Babs anymore. But this movie, as well as... I want to say both Blues Brothers and Trading Places have the card at the end that says, when at Universal, ask for Babs.
Interesting.
Yeah. Little legend of this movie. So something else that it did for this world, I guess. I don't know. Well, there we go. I think that's National Lampoon's Animal House. Oh, boy, Aaron. So, yeah, here's those numbers I alluded to earlier. On IMDb, it scored 7.4 out of 10 and has a Metascore of 79. So IMDb, not huge fans of it. But on Rotten Tomatoes, it has a whopping 91% on the tomato meter. Like, critics, 91%.
Yeah.
And an audience rating of 89%. But, Aaron, those are just numbers. Like Bluto smashing a guitar against the wall. Hit us with some reviews.
It's actually only 53 reviews for that 91%. So I would hope that somebody would watch this and maybe change their mind. But I went back to IMDb and I looked for... It took me some time.
Okay.
But I found it. I found one of the very few out of 334 reviews, a 1 out of 10 stars. Okay? And this one says... This one says, worse than Superman 4. And that was terrible.
It was.
Not only was the plot thin and dry, worse than that terrible excuse for a movie Superman 4, the humor was as funny as being kicked in the teeth by a horse wearing spurs. At least it ended before comatose set in. It was certainly a contender for the top 10 worst movies of all time, and I've seen some bad movies. The money would have been put to better use as a source of heat by burning for homeless people. Cruel, but true.
You know... I really appreciate the side agenda against Superman Quest for Peace.
Yeah.
I would almost want to go over to Superman 4 Quest for Peace right now, find this guy's review of Superman 4 Quest
and it probably
for
talks,
Peace.
It probably compares it to Animal House.
I mean, I just want to. I'm kind of. Hold on. What was this guy's name again? I'm writing this down because after the show, I am going to find to see if this guy has an IMDb review. I'm not going to waste our time on air here doing this. You know,
Captain Control.
Captain Control. Okay. Actually, you continue on with reviews. I'm going to see if I can find it right now.
Okay.
I will do it live. But
and
I'll try to listen to you.
Another person put, so here's another 1 out of 10. Universal is on a double secret probation for putting out such an atrocious video transfer.
Nice.
And then you got Ollie Suave 007 says, boring, tasteless comedy. I normally watch a film in its entirety before writing a review, but this one is an exception. After sitting through about a third of Animal House, a movie about a college dean trying to expel the troublemaking Delta Tau Chi fraternity, I switched it off. It was one of the most boring, tasteless comedies I've ever seen, with unfunny gags, campy acting, and annoying characters. Just the loudmouth frat brats attempting to make trouble from one wild party to another at the same time trying to outsmart the dean was too much to endure. There was no substance in the humor, just boring gags and irritating dialogue one after the other. So now I'm going to go over to, you know, the Rotten Tomatoes website, and I'm going to find a 10 out of 10 review.
Okay.
This guy says the film has swept through the American box office like a whirlwind precipitating a rash of incipient college romps. One waits with trepidation, but at least the Trailblazer has vitality and charm. Wow. I don't really even know what to say to that one.
Yeah, fancy words. 10 out of 10.
I don't. Somebody wrote, here's another one. It's the Independent Critic. Actually, I don't want to read, because that's not a person. Okay. I want a person.
The people. You want the people.
Give me the people. This guy gave it a 5 out of 5, Marcus B. And he says, you either like this kind of humor or you don't. I love it. You either had time similar to this in college or you didn't. I wasn't in a frat, thank heavens, but had similar time, so I appreciate where the movie is coming from. I can see why some might think this movie is overrated, but I enjoy it for all it's worth. Well, Marcus B., you probably have some crimes that you want to go talk to the police about. Some of those being, you know, pedophilia, attempted murder, crimes just against humanity. So please go turn yourself in.
Hopefully he was just talking about, like, toga parties.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Even though that's where the worst of it usually happened.
Here said this is arguably the greatest comedy ever made. Its acting is great, the writing is amazing, and it's a laugh out loud funny.
Yikes. You know, I gotta say, none of these 10 out of 10 reviews have, like, swayed my decision on this movie, my feeling of this movie. No. Like, none of it has been like, oh, that's a good fucking point. I never thought of it that way. No, none of them are like, nah. None of them have even bumped me up a point. Yeah. Well, Aaron, you know what? I say let's just give up on the reviews with the 10 out of 10s. Fuck those people.
I find Captain Control's review of Superman 4.
Because I have a treat for you.
Oh. Sorry.
No, it's all good. I stepped on yours in the beginning. We both found it. So, you know, if you want to read it, you go ahead.
No, go ahead.
We can swap paragraphs. No, there's a lot here, dude, though.
Feel free. Feel free, my friend.
Okay. Maybe we will follow along. You might have to take over. There's a lot here. Okay. Doomsday didn't kill Superman. This movie did. I like that. That's a solid title.
That is.
Captain Control. 2000. He wrote this 23 years ago, Aaron. When Superman 4 comes to mind, one often thinks of the pain associated with its viewing. My friend and I, after being stranded on a remote island in Papua New Guinea, decided to search for entertainment. Instead, we found the Superman series. Oh shit, is he gonna dump on the whole series? To add a new effect, we decided to view them in the opposite order, 4-3-2-1. I'm glad he clarified that is reverse order. Is a countdown from 4-3-2-1. Thank you, Captain Control. Strangely enough, special effects, which I will assume are supposed to evolve over time, improved, and Reeves' potbelly appeared to vanish. Exclamation point. By the way, to avoid embarrassment, we watched them very late at night with curtains closed. Okay. They were obviously smoking a joint. if Animal of the House has taught me anything. One also finds themselves asking, where are the actors now? Perhaps Gene Hackman managed to resurrect his career after his potentially career-crippling experience in this movie. However, the big angry man that would occasionally growl, I am still debating with a friend whether the growling was also dubbed. Yes, the man they call Mark Pillow. Where is Mark Pillow now? Mark Pillow. Wow. He's on IMDb. Why can't he look up where Mark Pillow is? You want to know where he is? Look him up.
Exactly. God.
After looking up at his impressive film... Oh, he did. Okay. Spoke too soon. One does seem to believe that QFP... What is QFP? Some QFP in TV series. Alaska Kid? QFP. Something film production? No idea. Quebec?
Quality film plan? Financial planner? Quality okay. Family planning?
Okay, here. You pick it up at that paragraph there.
Okay. I have also had many a debate with a friend of mine regarding whether Pillow is constantly tormented by fellow workmates. Don't try to tell me he is making his money by acting. Friends. If he still has any, and family, I won't be that cruel, with infamous lines such as, where's the woman? And, if you don't tell me, I will hurt people. I know I would. It is often debated as to whether he was proud of his role in such a pitiful film. We believe that he was thrown out of a bar and landed at the feet of the casting crew who felt sorry for this drunken nobody. I will assume that these people, like Margot Kidder, have been committed. Jesus, this guy is ruthless. Unfortunately, Reeve dared fate with a second shot of the line, "Don't do it, the people," after his ear-to-ear smile in Superman 2. My friend and I believe that he was daring the Phantom Zone villains to beat up the innocent citizens of Metropolis with the dangerous, irregular movement of a bus. However, while not smiling this time anyway, my friend and I were forced to declare the line as a poor Reeve call. Lines that we have always found useful in day-to-day life include, "Excuse me, I think you're sitting in my seat." "Don't thank me, we're all part of the same team." "I won't let you down again." "Stop, that's enough, that's enough. You win."
I like how he gives notations with all of them of which movie it is. And, like, he's not doing them in order. This guy's bringing receipts.
He is. "Give it up. You'll never find her" from 4. And "Father, I failed" from 2. "If by now you think that we are the ones that should be committed, you are obviously taking these comments far too seriously. While being very accurate, they are humorous as well." If you want to continue.
Oh, so far we haven't I don't know. Fuck, we're almost there. Okay. Cuz I'm just like, I don't know. Is this even worth keeping? And this guy actually sucks. I'm very disappointed in this review.
Yeah.
Because it's not a review. Yeah. I just scanned ahead. I don't know. I give up on this guy. Fuck this guy.
He's not as funny he's not consistently funny.
Yeah. Oh, boy. So, well, whatever. Darn. That would have been a great bit. Alrighty. So, high scores. I don't know why. Aaron. Animal House. You're just, silently shaking your head.
I gave you my opinion. I'm glad this movie was created the only... for only the reason that it inspired a lot of comedies that formed my humor and my childhood.
Yeah. Like, seeing some of these guys, because I did not grow up with them at this age, I grew up with them at older ages. I mean, Kevin Bacon's just been there my entire life. So, you know, I love seeing Kevin Bacon in this movie, even though he's got, like, nothing to do.
Yeah, except yell at people.
Yeah. You know, some of these older guys, like, it's like, I love that they ended up doing the connection with Van Wilder's dad being, you know, the one guy from, you know, the cool guy here. It's basically the same character as Van Wilder's dad. so it's kind of neat seeing some of these guys where it's like, I recognize you, but older. But other than that, I got a couple chuckles, but I think I just watched Animal House for the last time.
You used to hate this one, but you probably still do. And if you didn't, you probably should.
Well, yeah, and I mean, I approached it from the perspective of, hey, originally I was supposed to love this one, and no, I'm good. I'll go watch Van Wilder.
Yeah.
I'll go watch Accepted. I'll go watch Futurama.
All sound like better options.
I'll go watch Monsters University. There are so many movies that this inspires that are just so much better.
Agreed.
Boom. Yeah. Sorry, Animal House. Don't like ya.
I'm not sorry. Sorry, not sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you have the fun perspective that you came in hating both your movies. And you walk out hating both your movies. Whereas I came in hating both my movies, and I walk out going, not so bad. I mean, all 4 of these I probably watched for the very last time anyway. But, yeah, at least 2 of them turned me around. 50-50, not bad.
Not bad.
Mm-mm. Yeah, I'd take those if I were buying a lottery ticket. Well, there we go. That's Animal House. And that's our show for this week. Oh, boy. If you want to help us out, well, you know, tell people. And then get them to tell people and get them to tell people. And then it's like a game of telephone or a word chain. No, what's an old-timey, the word, the telephone tree. No, the word, I don't know. I don't know what I'm talking about.
Telegram?
Telegrams, yes. Telegrams.
What are you trying to say here?
I'm. D- Did you ever have that thing where it was like the network of moms, where it's like each one of them had five people?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, like a telephonic phone tree. Yeah.
Yeah, a telephone tree. Yeah, phone tree. Yeah. But, I mean, text all your friends and tell them to listen to this. I don't know. Yeah, see, long way of saying tell people about our show. Or go give it a review and some stars and like and subscribe and all those things. You know, or, you know, because they really help drive people up the charts. They make the algorithms do their little dance that help move us up the charts. Or if you want to go above and beyond and be a supporter of the show, go over to patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne and donate. And you become an executive producer of the show. So you get a shout out, just like Joshua Blum of the 13th Hour Podcast.
And if you want to contact or even donate to the show, you can email us at IUsedToLikeThisOne@gmail.com. Social media is IUsedToLikeThisOne for Instagram, or IUsedToLikeThisOne with numbers instead of words. You know what? But that's Twitter. So find us there if you want to. Who cares? I'm just kidding. We care. On social media, get the heads up on what our next movie is going to be. And you're going to like the next set. I promise.
Well, see, yeah, and, I mean, that's in the script that on social media you'll get the heads up, but, yeah, we've started discussing it, like, during the credits here. Let me do the other bit here, hold on. I Used to Like This One is hosted by and produced by Sean Wells and Aaron Knowles. It is edited by Sean Wells, music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band, Carter and the Capitals, anywhere you listen to music. And if you would like to hear more from me and my stories of being a bus driver, check out my other podcast, In Front of the Yellow Line, anywhere pods are cast. And Aaron, where can they find you and your own stuff that you're doing?
You can find me on my other podcast, which is the Oblivion Bar Pod. You can find that on everywhere, just like the show, anywhere that pods are cast. You can also find me on my social media handles, which is at Better Actions, or my nonprofit, which is at Shred the Stress. So check me out on both those platforms, and I'm everywhere.
Nice. So, Aaron, we are done the Hate Week month.
Thank God.
Yeah. It was a fun little stroll.
It was a fun stroll down what should have been a good memory lane.
Yeah, yeah. And like I said, at least 50-50. That's not too bad.
50-50. So,
yeah, I didn't hate watching two movies for the first time. That's kind of how... Or, well, I mean, I basically watched all of them for the first time in a way.
Yeah, exactly. I feel
like, but, yeah, yeah. With the different eyes. But anyway, what do we have coming up? We have a new month, though. We're getting out of this hate-filled month that we've created for ourselves, and we're bringing some more fun.
Well, insert coin, buddy, because...
Insert coin. Oh,
insert coin, you know?
One-up sound or something.
Yeah, you know, smash that two-player button, or the player two button on that arcade console, and let's fire up the next month, which is video games.
Video game
movies.
Month. Yeah, we're going to do a month of video game movies, starting with... Oh, boy, it's my favorite. This is one... I have to say, back in episode 6, we did Mortal Kombat, the movie. And at one moment in that episode, I accidentally started dropping some Street Fighter knowledge. Accidentally. Like, I might have thrown in a Chun-Li or I might have accidentally called it Street Fighter. That happened a couple times. Because growing up, I was a Street Fighter player, and so, yeah, as a movie, oh boy, Jean-Claude Van Damme, classic.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Street Fighter. Yeah, I was a Street Fighter guy, not a Mortal Kombat guy growing up, so. Same. I mean, I've been talking about this movie since, who's your guy? Oh, maybe I should save that for the episode.
Yes, we should.
Oh, there we go, cliffhanger, boom. Yeah, and then we'll save that until, like, the last minute of the next episode. There we go, Street Fighter. I can't wait. I'm excited. I can't even remember Street Fighter.
Oh, I'm so pumped for it.
Maybe I haven't. I'm sure I've seen it. I'm sure I've seen it. I had to have seen it.
I guarantee you have. Yeah. If you haven't, you're in for a treat, my friend.
I can't wait. This is a good month, video game month. Can't wait. Okay, cool. Well, thank you for listening to this episode. No more hate. next back to like. We'll see you next week with Street Fighter. And I used to like this one. Player one, fight.
A new challenger has entered the game.
They should see, and now the multiverse could do a Capcom. Oh, no, I gotta save this material.